While Damon's doing all that, let me say this in case somebody listens to this CD, because he puts them out everywhere, you know. We want to impress them with something. We are at the behind the Kennesaw State University tonight, the Fellowship Hall. Seats 500 folks, and this place is packed. Good evening, everybody. I'm Jerry Beard, and I'm an alcoholic. But first of all, I want to thank the group for asking me, Rick, calling me in. I'll get into it in a little while. I hope this group was very meaningful to me years ago. And Amanda and the two Ricks and some more that was here. And I appreciate them doing what the job they've done with this group. And it's an honor for me to be asked to share my story down tonight. I'm supposed to share in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. Goodness gracious, girl. if I don't get around to all that, it's because I got this thing called old age now. And I'm going to put out a little disclaimer here to let you know, just in case. Friend of mine told me about the other day. There was these two old couples went shopping together, and they're down at the mall, and two old gentlemen over to the side. One of them told the other one, says, boy, we went to a great place to eat last night. The other one said, you did? Said, what's the name of it? He said, said, hold on a minute. Said, he thought, and he couldn't think of it, and he said, finally said, what's that flower? That'll stick if you go together and picking them. He said, yeah, Rose. What was the name of that restaurant we went to last night? that could be me. So if I get lost somewhere down the line here, I'll catch back up. And if anybody gets through before I do, I understand that too. I'll probably talk a little bit here in a little while about Jeanette and I were blessed to get to go to the Avalon International Convention last week in Vancouver, and it had been on my mind all day. I'm going to go ahead and get it out now. Please, Jeanette, stand up. I want everybody to see my beautiful. you know, the difference, I'll try to get into it here in a little while, the difference between an alcoholic and non-alcoholic is unbelievable. But still, at this convention, I've seen there's a lot of sick folks there, too, you see. And what really got me, not once, and we heard quite a few of the speakers, did I hear any of the speakers talk about that they'd run tests on them. You know, they always running tests on us, on alcoholics, all the time, trying to figure out what's wrong. They did not talk about one time running a test on Al-Anon, and I guarantee you there's some sick folks up there. That being said, I'm going to try to get into, I better go to getting drunk here. Never will get sober. I come from a long line of alcoholics in my family. Youngest of seven kids, five either died or hospitalized or recovered. Me being the only one recovered today. Out of that, the rest of them did, with the exception of one. My daddy was alcoholic. People shy away. He's dead and gone. But I come by it honest, not to blame him. Father Hillary, some of you heard in the room, cleared that up for me right quick. It don't matter how the jackass got in the ditch, let's get him out. And so that's what I've been blessed to do. In Alcoholics Anonymous, through a loving God, in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. My sobriety date is November the 5th, 1985. I belong to the Friday Night Closed Discussion Group in Carville, Georgia. You're invited to come here anytime. I have a sponsor and I have sponsees. Only by the grace of God does an alcoholic stay sober one day at a time that long. I got here. If you'd have told me I'd got 24 days in, I'd have been tickled. But I'm going to start from the beginning. I was a late bloomer, and by today's standards, I didn't start drinking until I was 12 years old. The very first drink done what it's supposed to do that our book talks about. It was magic for this alcoholic, because there's a lot happened to me when I was 12 years old. I got my first job shining shoes in a barbershop in Ackworth, Georgia. I was saved in the First Baptist Church, and I had my first drink. Well, that's a tailspin. But what happened on that first drink, the magic I talked about, worked better than anything that I'd ever experienced. Because prior to that drink, our book talks about the fears. I was eat up with fear. I was too short. I was too fat. I had buck teeth. And I was scared of Jim Smith down the street. Two Carlin Black Labels are a part of two. I can't even tell you I drank all of them. That's the rottenest tasting stuff I ever put in my mouth. Two or less than two of the Carlin Black Labels changed everything. That's what I'm talking about. They run tests on us, try to figure out what's wrong. There's something different about us. It sets off a phenomenal craving, the two best things I've ever heard in the book. The magic comes about like it don't happen to normal folks. Normal drinkers, they don't do that. I wasn't too short, I wasn't too fat, and buck teeth didn't bother me, and I wasn't scared of Jim Smith. Everybody don't get that ticket. It don't happen to everybody. I said, what is this? From that time until I was 40, I drank every time I could. You don't start off on no daily drinking at 12 years old, not in the house, even though I was raised a bunch of alcoholics. My mama didn't tolerate it. Anyhow, I'm going to fast forward a little bit tonight, because a lot of times I get caught up. And my coach is here. She tells me when I stay in the drunk log too long. I'm going to fast forward to 17 years old. You know what we do as teenagers, sneaking around, drinking, going up on the lake, getting drunk and fighting like cats and dogs and scrapping and not. But at 17 was the first time that the veil went off in my head that I might drink a little bit different. The same lady that got myself and my best friend those Carlin Black Label beers got us a fifth of Seagram 7 whiskey apiece from Dobbins Air Force Base, and she was one of the most beautiful women I ever seen in my life. By the way, before I forget it, she died at 40 years old, cirrhosis of the liver. But she got myself and Johnny this fifth of liquor apiece. His parents was gone. We had the house, had two lady friends over, and I started to drink the liquor just straight out the bottle. And my friend tell me, you can't do that. You're going to get sick. I said, I got it. Because I was feeling good for just a few minutes. I had it all right, but I don't know for how long. But that fifth went down, and I was sick, and I was drunk, and I was begging him to take me to Kennerstone Hospital to get my stomach pumped out. He said, I got a fix for you. He took me downstairs, put me in a rocking chair, and rocked me, and it come out. But that was the first time that I had any inkling. That didn't make me no alcoholic. But that was the first time the bell went off. Said, I remembered him begging me not to continue to do that. Little did I know that I had an obsession to drink. If I put one drink in, the phenomenal craving was going to sit in, and I was going to drink some more. It made me so sick, and I thought I was going to die. I come to one of the solutions in the book. I quit drinking bourbon whiskey. Seagram 7. I swore off whiskey. I'll just stick with beer. At 17, I also quit high school. Out of seven kids, I was the youngest. And the oldest, others being a lot older than me, and my mother and dad had a tough time, not up here to give you a hard luck story, them getting through school and whatever. I had the best opportunity and blew it the worst right here at Northcroft High School. Because I wanted to work, and I was already working at night and afternoons, and I wanted to be, I got this thing also called Big Shot Alice. I wanted to live on the right side of the tracks, not where I was being raised. And before I forget it, At that 12 years old. I should have known, but see, we can't pick up on this stuff. When even before I had that first drink, it's all about me. My daddy got sick, and the kids across the tracks I was talking about was going skating at Rawler Street. Some of you in the room know where there used to be a skating ring down there. It was 95 cents, total package deal, renting skates and skating. I had an invite to go. I asked my mother for a dollar. She said, we ain't got a dollar. And I kept running my mouth. I could not understand how come she, and she started crying. She said, they're not a dollar on the hill, son. I started crying, and that's when I got my first job shining shoes. I said, this will never happen again. But what that did not take away was that big shot at us. At 17, I done told you, I wanted to be like the other kid, the rich kids in town. I wanted to have a car, I wanted to do this, I wanted to do that. And I was working all the time, and there's no way I could have got an education. No way. Quit high school and broke my mother's heart again. The youngest of seven. And old Merle Haggard about that time come along. Some of you, a few of you in the room are old enough to remember. He come out with a song, Mama Tried. Mama tried with this drunk, trust me. And she already had a lot of experience fooling drunk. She'd already been dealing with them all her life. So I got me a job driving a feed truck. I had these grandiose plans with this big shot out of us I got. I wanted to move to Atlanta, get me an apartment, have a bar in it, I could just see it, and have all the pretty girls in Atlanta just come in, and I was just going to have a time. I could just see it, just this plain, and I'm looking at Brian, I could just see it. I could see me fitting in the picture. But what I couldn't see was, you cannot do that delivering chicken feed. There's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with delivering chicken feed. Now, I'm not putting that down, but I couldn't go where I wanted to go on what I was doing. Now, I'm not the fast at it. I told you I ain't got no education. But it didn't take me long to figure that out. Sure, you done in your best kit. You know what you've done. I said, I'll join the Army and get out of this trap. Probably one of the best moves I ever made. Went in the Army. volunteered for the draft 2 years. First started there. You know, we're bad about picking different type of heroes. I am. Because one of my brothers, that I'll talk some more about here in a minute, but he was my hero. I was 12-stepping him before I knew anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. He was a binge drinker. And he'd go from, when he got started, he was going to wind up one or two places, in jail or a hospital. But he smoked non-filtered, pale-mail cigarettes. Boy, I look, old Charles got it made. And he had that good, deep cigarette cough, if any of you remember that. It's sort of insane, but he had one. And I wanted to be just like Charles. Not the oldest brother in the family. He's the only one that did not drink, and I had no use for him because he needed a drink. Tell you the truth, he really needed one. Worked his way through Berry College, and, you know, that wasn't my hero. I'm bad about picking. Get in the Army, wind up at Fort Benning, Georgia. I had the base friend. Had a first sergeant come in. Name was Sergeant Vaughn. Two packs of Chesterfield, long Chesterfield, none filtered. You better have his coffee ready for him when he got there because he was hung over. He'd come in and lay him Chesterfields down, start that old cough. He'd take some coffee and he'd finally get. I said, I want to be just like Sergeant Vaughn. I switched over from Marlboros to none filtered Lucky Strike. Now, is that insane or what? But the reason I'm telling you this, Sergeant Vaughn told me one day, I'd become a only good thing I'd done in high school, I learned how to type, and that got me a clerk's job as an operation clerk and a mail clerk. He came in one day and said, Bearden, said, we'll take you and Hausnick to the NCO club tonight. I said, NCO, that sounds like a winner to me. I said, let me tell you something, though, Top. I go and drink beer, but I can't drink liquor. What do you mean you can't drink liquor? I said, you get drunk in a hurry and I do crazy things. I said, he said, I'm going to teach you how. Now, you think he wasn't on top of my list with them Chesterfield cigarettes going to teach me how to drink liquor? Let's go. He said, what you got to remember, I always drink it straight. Don't mix it with nothing but water and you'll be okay the next day. That may have worked for him, but it didn't work for me. Kept coming down orders to go to Vietnam. I was supposed to be a demolition expert. I told you when I couldn't blow up a firecracker. Draw demolition pay a month or two in the Army as a clerk. They put me on extra $50 a month. Oh, Lord. Finally, orders come down to go to Fort Devens, Massachusetts. There wasn't but two of us left with that MOS. Captain Davis came in and said, you're going to Fort Devens, Massachusetts. You're going to Vietnam. That was in August 1965. September, got to Fort Devens, Massachusetts, reported in. I was due out in January. Reported in the company commander. He said, what? In a few words, what are you doing here? I can't use you. We're going to train 90 days before before we go. I'm going to put you in a holding company. You're not going. This day and time, they would have extended it, you know. Anyway, I got to stay drunk, Fort Devens, Massachusetts, from September to January when I got discharged up there. Got to do a lot of drinking and a lot of nothing. Got to go to New York City. Tell this right quick to show you what. Here I was, 20 years old, not even legal age to drink in Georgia yet. Got to New York City, five of us met, out partying. Wound up, they put me in a cab to send me back. We was staying right off Times Square, and Times Square was pretty rough back in those days. I passed out in a taxi cab, and as I look back at my story, this is where I see that God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself the first time that I recall. A taxi cab driver woke me up. I passed out. He said, I know you're GI. I know what money you got's in your shoe. And if you continue on like this, you won't last long in this town. I thanked him, got out, got in the room. You know what happened? I had more booze up there, continued to drink. Several episodes, 5 days, I could have never hardly been out of Ackworth much. Went to Daytona a time or two and then wound up in New York City. As I look back, God started doing for me what I couldn't do for myself right there, watching after me. Go on, get discharged and come home. I ain't forgot that apartment I wanted in Atlanta. All the pretty girls. But I added something to it. Wanted me a black GTO, and they had one down at Spring Street, Boomershine Pontiac. I knew we'll forget it. Long as I live on the 3.2s, 4 in the floor, black as ace of spades. I wanted that car. How could this see me? Going to pick her up and carry her to that apartment with a bar in it. Shit, Pa. What are you talking about? About the time I got me a good job, Ford Motor Company, on the assembly line, making $3.05 an hour, big money back then. And about that time, myself and my son's mother hooked up. We got pregnant. I went to GTO, the apartment, the bar, and the pretty girl. My drinking was escalating. I meant to tell you from the get-go, I could sum my drinking up pretty quick and wouldn't have to go through all this, but most people won't buy into it. I drank in three stages. I drank because I wanted to. I drank because I needed to. And I drank because I had to. I was still in the needing to stages right there. I needed a drink to get a little relief. This thing bothered me about I was going to be responsible. I'd done seen a whole bunch of crap in my life, as we all do. Other members not doing right. I'm going to raise that kid. I'm going to do right regardless. So along with it, about that time, I become a workaholic. Got to move across them tracks. Started a little bit on my own and wound up working with the railroad. Moved across them tracks. Got to build a decent little home. Nice ranch home, had a swimming pool in the backyard, had her a new car on the carport. This ain't bad. And then the alcoholism started easing on in, progressing. I didn't know till I got to Alcoholics Anonymous I took all the blame for her being pregnant. A friend of mine has gone to a big meeting in the sky. Now he comes, spoke for us one night in Carville, Georgia. And when he said the words I said a while ago was where I got that. Sam said, "We got pregnant." I said, "Hello." That didn't relieve me of my responsibility then or now or whatever, but I get my answers through you people. I can pray all day, and I believe in prayer. I prayed before I got up here. Tonight, you can bet on that. But where I get my answers is through one of y'all. That was a prime example. Because when I'm asked to do this, there's usually three things I do. I try to pray up, I try to clean up, and I try to show up on time. And tonight, by golly, I filled up before I got up here. So, and four of them. But as this thing was progressing, my son's mother started on her route. She had some issues with depression, and you throw alcoholism in there with it, and she started having to take a lot of medication, and I started drinking a lot more. There's a lot of things I wasn't going to do as a married man, but I'm going to go ahead and cut the chase on this. 1979, we sold our business. I was working at night with the railroad and running it in daytime with myself and my brother. And I was about to kill my food self working and wearing and da 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 and drinking every chance I got in that. We sold the business, that loosened up where I could drink a little more. 1983, latter part of 82, I left Atlanta to go on the road because I could make more money. Got on the road with the railroad, meaning going from Atlanta to Chattanooga, Cleveland, Tennessee, the furthest part. But I thought I had died and went to heaven. I repacked a quart of liquor in my suitcase every trip home before I repacked my clean clothes. And for about the first year or two out there, I could go to the hotel room, drink like I wanted to drink, pass out, whoever I wanted, as long as I could answer that phone when they... And you can just about figure when it's going to call, you know, where you're going to have a long layover, da 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 da. Those last 3 years of my drinking, I'm glad I got to go out there because I feel like I progressed faster and I got to this bottom that I need to get to by doing that had I been a little slower. Anyway, alcoholism took me to places I didn't want to go and it called me to do things I didn't want to do. In that last couple of years, in the last year, I started doing things that unbecoming to a married man. That's all I got to say there. And the little black fellow that worked, I never will forget him, worked at the desk. I was dating this lady that worked at the desk there. And long story short, her husband called and told me he was on the way to kill me. I don't know why he called me. And the little fellow at the desk heard this and he called the police. And anyway, got it all. I'd started getting on these old crying drunks. There ain't nothing I hate worse than a crying drunk. You know, it is sick. It just gets on my last nerve. And by God, what did I turn into? A damn old crying drunk. It got where my ex-wife didn't want to hear me, my girlfriend didn't want to hear me, and the guy to work with didn't want to hear me. You know? And I said, my ex-wife, she was progressing. Whatever all that she's got, I don't know. All I know, she took a lot of prescription drugs, and we wound up getting a divorce, and she turned to alcohol, and it's not pretty today. It's not a pretty... My husband-in-law, she married, died of this disease about 2 years ago. And she's right in there with him. She's blowed up like a... It's not pretty right now. That's my son's mother. I'm talking about no disrespect. I'm just telling you what happened. Well, she was in the hospital over at Thornton Road. She done made all the hospitals. She just went over on Thornton Road. And I went over to see her. And I was going on a Monday. I was going to tell the doctor he needed to get her straightened out. She had some bad problems. number one problem she had was here, you know, living in alcoholism. But what happened on the Sunday, right prior to that, was in Cleveland, Tennessee. We got there on a Saturday night, and our book talks about it, and all of us say some godlike. And this is just a belief, and this don't make it right. I believe if there's something that you had some spirituality in your past, it comes out. It will come out here. Mine come out. I knew there was a God up there, but I hadn't been doing what I was supposed to, and I was scared to pray to God. Had this old preacher hung around a depot, Cleveland, Tennessee. He's a railroad buck. He'd get on my last nerve. We'd go in there and he'd start asking, what's the horsepower on so-and-so locomotive and all that? And I'd dodge him because I'd done be drinking and smelling like booze. I didn't want to be around him. A lot of things get on my nerve. But I'd buy a church. People would pray together, stay together. I didn't want to see that by no means. That old preacher. On Saturday night, I got up there and I had a quart of liquor in my bag and I drank it. On several occasions a year prior to that, the stuff got, I didn't know when it was going to work, when it wasn't going to work. I didn't know how much it's going to take or when it's going to be. Sometime I could drink three or four drinks and be drunk as a Cooter Brown. The next time I could drink a good bit, you know, but I didn't know when it was going to hit me. We got up there and it looked like a 24-hour layover, and this isn't the first time this happened. But anyhow, I sat there and drank, and we were doing things we weren't supposed to be doing. And I never turned my sheets back, and the phone rang, and they deadheaded a bunch of crews out, and we got called back to work. I knew alcohol had already turned on me because too many times, we're not dumb people. I'm not dumb. But I knew alcohol was winning the battle on too many occasions. I'd have a quart of liquor sitting on the table in that hotel room. I'd mark it on there. I'm going to drink half of it, go to bed, save a half, we go to see. Didn't work. The godlike thing would kick in. I'd see that Bible over there. I got up and put the Bible in the drawer and get the liquor out, drink the liquor, and then reverse them, according to how long the liquor would last. 2 hours, whatever. Anyway, November 3rd, 1985, I come to my jumping off point. I knew I could not drink. I knew it. We got called back to work, and I asked the conductor, we still had Caboose on the train then. I said, Bobby, let me ride the Caboose. You ride ahead. And he said, I'm tired of it. He said, I got two of you. You stay drunk up here, and Blessed stays drunk in Atlanta, and I can't get no rest on the other end. I'm not doing your job for you. He said, get up there and do your job. I got up on the locomotive, put my suitcase down, got back to the third locomotive. And there's two prayers I said in my life. I believe the reason I'm standing up here tonight. And one of them was on that locomotive on my knees. I said, if there's a God up there, let something happen. I can't stand no more. I don't care if we turn over, smother dead, burn it. I don't care. I went to the jumping off point. Can't imagine life with or without. It described it better than I say it in the book. That's where I was. Come south, and actually I kept a drink. I was never going to drink on the job. You keep drinking. You keep drinking. It'll carry you to places you don't want to go, and it'll cause you to do things you want to do. I had to have a drink. I could not drink. Get back. I told you about my wife being in the hospital. That didn't stop me. Went over to my brother's on a Monday night football, playing the big shot and made some bets on a football game. Didn't know which way I bet with a bookie in Atlanta. Bet more than I should have been betting. The next morning, I told you about my hero, Charles. The next morning, I overslept. Was supposed to meet with a doctor to explain to him how messed up she was. Got up, trying to shave, and giving it this number, and I said, I got to have a drink, naturally. Drank what blended whiskey I had left, and that's all I drank. And that, nothing didn't happen. I've been taught in the program Alcoholics Anonymous, let me put this disclaimer out, to take what you want, leave the rest. Now take whatever you want, this part you want, and leave the rest. I leave too much, I'm going to be drunk. But anyhow, finally got some gin, the only thing left in the house I bought for her. She didn't drink that much gin at the time. Drank it, and I hope and pray that's the last thing I ever put in my system. But I could not cut this thing off. First time suicide seriously crossed my mind. I said, I can't quit drinking. There's no way out. There's just no way out. All of a sudden, I looked in that mirror, and just like me looking at Dottie, there that dead brother of mine picture just come up in that mirror. If you don't do something, you're going to die, boy. You're going to die. You're going to be like y'all. That prayer that I prayed 2 days earlier, I believe what saved my bacon. I was lucky enough to call, get some help, lucky enough to go to a good treatment center, lucky enough to hook up with some good people at Charter Petersburg, lucky enough to hook up with a good fellow alcoholic, a little woman named Liv, that I feel like helped save my life, that I wanted to talk about everybody in group but Jerry. And Liv had enough experience. She weighed 90 pounds, soaking wet. I never had no platoon sergeant rough as Liv was. Finally, she told one day, she says, Jerry, we're going to talk about Jerry. I said, oh, shit. Back in my mind, you see, who wants to be an alcoholic? I didn't set out in life to be an alcoholic. I was going to fight every avenue to beat this thing. I still didn't come to terms. I knew I could not drink. I knew that. I'd seen it. But I couldn't come to terms. And that's where I see people have a lot of problems in Alcoholics Anonymous, getting honest about their drinking. You can go through all kinds of stuff, but if you don't get honest about where it took you, and I thank God that Liv was put in my life. Because when she started talking to me and jacked me up against the wall, I said, Liv, let me ask you something. We had a volunteer coming out there every night reading to us out of the big book. He read the doctor's opinion. Oh, my. He read page 30. I know he did. Out of my head. I couldn't get it to take. Finally, when Liv got through chewing on my fanny and told me I better listen, da, 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 I said, Liv, let me ask you something. I'd already seen Charles. I'd already seen other people die from this thing. Had a beautiful sister. Wet her brain from it. I'd seen it. We're not stupid. But I didn't want to throw in the towel. I didn't want to get honest about what it done to me. I said, Liv, let me ask you something. I said, what is it that makes an alcoholic? Even though it had already been explained to me. See, the book don't give you no definition. It gives you a description of alcoholic. I'd heard those, but wouldn't say. She said, Jerry, said, try this on. And there's somebody in this room tonight wondering whether this thing will work for them or not. And I hope and pray you get something. I don't know whether it be this tool or not, but this one worked for me. She said, Jerry, try this on. It don't matter what you drank, where you at when you drank it, or how much you drank. But it's what it does to you as a result of drinking. And your ass is in the hospital. I wished I could tell you that I conceded to my innermost self that night I was an alcoholic. No, that didn't happen. I was lucky enough for God to put people in my life. And I get out of that hospital, get to Carville, Jordan, met up with a man in a Kroger parking lot I'd never seen before in my life. In a little red Toyota truck. He said, you Jerry? And I said, yeah. He said, follow me. He took off. God, I might have just flying. I said, damn. That man sober? Or his name was George. We get over to the clubhouse. Car with Jordan. Somebody been there. The Sure Club. Get out of the car. He said, let me have a talk with you right quick before we go in here. Said, yes, sir. I was ready to stand and think. He said, you see all them churches over there? I said, yes, sir. He said, you see this rinky-dink little building right here? I said, yes. He said, now, put this in your head. If you want to save your soul, strike out. He said, if you want to save your ass from alcoholism, I suggest you go in there, sit down, shut up, and listen, and you might have a chance. And sometime in that first week, he also told me that I wasn't nothing but a liar, cheat, and a thief. You know, it's hard to get by with that this day and time in Alcoholics Anonymous. You liable to get whooped. But if I try to help anybody, it's what I, because I didn't understand. He was trying to explain to me the main ingredient in the first step, as I see it. You've got to get honest about your drinking or you ain't got a hope. He said, Jerry, you lied to everybody in your life. If you drink an alcoholically, you're a liar. You've cheated your employer. You've cheated your family. And you stole from them. If you didn't, you're not an alcoholic. That's what we do. I said, God, can he be a little plainer with it here or what? I'm very sensitive, don't suffer well. Little did I know, I was lucky enough to get in there, and the people loved me sober. That's reading my hand is I try to put it out. I don't care who it is. Comes through that door. Because we don't care where you come from, Yale or jail. The people loved me long enough. Had a lady named Lois, real soft-spoken. Lois got there 3 or 4 days ahead of me. And George had 3 of us fools he was dealing with. But Lois was sitting right beside me, and she said, I'm Lois, I'm an alcoholic. It wasn't 90 days, Lois said, I'm Lois, I'm an alcoholic. She was smiling. I went to George, I said, George, something ain't right. He said, what is it? I said, Lois is getting better, and I ain't getting no better. He said, yeah, you are, dear. I ain't tell. 4 months coming in for the time. Got a man chairing a meeting, his son right now, trying to get sober in Carl. Been sober about a year now, thank God. Chaired a meeting on one day at a time. If y'all hadn't gathered by now, I'm pretty simple minded. Try to keep a pretty simple approach the same. But that's one of the most important tools I've ever learned about life or about alcoholism. Don't tell me tonight that I can't drink Labor Day. I'll have a nut up on you. Suggest to me, Jerry, if you stay sober today, you got another shot at this thing tomorrow. That sounds pretty simple, though. That's how I've done it for all these years. And I think about that man many a time. This depot group went through a divorce after 5 years of sobriety. That marriage didn't have a hope. I hid out in Alcoholics Anonymous for 5 years. Things wasn't good at my house. Not blaming her, not blaming her. I'm telling you, I went to a lot of meetings and a lot of stuff. And I thought about, you know, your conscience will kick in. If you get sober, things will start happening. I knew what was going on. Matter of fact, my ex's sister said that A&A just rent, Jerry. Said he just never was at home. He got on that A&A. That A&A was keeping me from killing her, too, and a lot of things, you know. I shared all my misery. Worst divorce, and Jeanette likes to make fun of this. All my misery and Carl, they about tired of hearing that stuff. I thought I better bring some to Kennesaw. Come down to the depot group. When it was a depot, at the depot, and you couldn't hardly get a word in for the trains, but we'd work them in there some way. Met a guy that I feel like done me one of the biggest favors I've ever had. In Alcoholics Anonymous. I shared all my crap during that meeting, and Carl wasn't a loudmouth drunk like myself. He was low-key, calm. He waited till the meeting was over. He come outside, standing out there, and he suggested, I want to share something with you the old man shared with me. I said, what's that, Carl? He said, if you'll work this program, don't drink no liquor, go to meeting. God will take out whatever needs to go, and he'll put back whatever needs to be there. Now, what Carl did not tell me, hearing that, because it happened, what he didn't tell me is going to be 6 years, and there she sits. So I've got to share that with a lot of people. I'm not a marriage counselor, but I thank God for Carl. Because during that time, I prayed that second most important prayer I was telling you about. At 2 a.m. on a Thursday morning, the pain was so strong with 5 years of sobriety, with nobody there but me, drink crossed my mind. I need to cut this thing off. The magic, if you drank the way I did and got the results as you did, you get on fire strong enough mentally. If it don't cross your mind, you got a different program than what I got. Because it hadn't happened to me but a couple of times, but I'm telling you, it happened. At 2 a.m. in the morning, I wanted some relief. I'd done what the people had suggested to me and a good sponsor. And the book tells us, at some point in time, there won't be nothing to stand between you and a drink, your higher power. I got on my knees that night. I said, God, help me. I was already dressed. I knew where I'd get a drink between Ackworth and going to work that morning on the railroad. It'd been 5 years, but I hadn't forgot everything. I did not drink after I prayed that prayer. I did not sleep, I can tell you that. It was a rough day. But that was more insurance that this thing will work if I do what it suggested to me to do. And I've been able to pass it on to some other people, what Carl passed on to me. Jeanette loves me to talk about her. She's out on. Little did I know, rocking along, 5 years after that time, met at a class reunion at Ackworth Beach. You never know where that's at. And I could tell you about falling in lust, but I couldn't tell you about falling in love. Here I was 50 years old. Went to Ackworth Beach to a class reunion. My best friend had given that first carton beer, and his wife was best friend with her. They said, y'all need to go tonight. And Curtis go and went. I danced with her one time, maybe twice. Wasn't no bell, the whistle went off. And I said, well, you know, she's a nice lady. That would be cool. So she kidded me about now. She said, exactly what do you want? I said, I want some good-looking blonde, 5'2", and made $100,000 a year and didn't have no kid. She fit part of the bill. I ain't going to tell you. She didn't have no kids, though. And not that I don't love kids. Anyhow, we started dating and dated 2 or 3 months. I can't tell you to the day. Went down to pick her up one night. She lived at a home off of Whitlock Avenue, a town home. Went down and picked her up. And she come walking down the stairway in that townhouse. I looked up. She had on a white outfit. I looked up, and there's something come over me. I said, damn, this must have been what they've been talking about all this time. Here I am, 50 years old. I fell in love. That's a strange feeling for a 50-year-old man. And if I had time, would permit to tell you what took place in the last 16 years of this marriage, you would not believe. You would not believe. Alcoholics Anonymous had took me to places I never dreamed of going. Alcoholics Anonymous had called me to do things I never dreamed but was in it. Little man right here done stole my heart tonight. He walked in here. I just got a grandson 9 years old. And I know without a shadow of a doubt he's going to need this deal. And that just makes me want to work harder. And I hadn't got into the service end of this thing tonight. I wished I had it, but I'm here to suggest to you. Find your niche in Alcoholics Anonymous, whatever it may be. My first and most important job in this program was that old hard man I was telling you about, he showed me that coffee pot on Monday night. And he said, that's your job, Jerry. Clean it up. Be here. Clean it up. And I've been involved with service work of some kind ever since. And some of you, I'm going to promote old Brookings a little bit for next week over at, some of you hear him. This is his line from Milledgeville, Georgia. Service work's not for everybody, just the ones that want to stay sober. And I buy into that. It don't matter. It don't mean that you got to be a GSR, a DCM, a state devil. Service work. Somebody had to get this place ready tonight. Somebody got to clean it up. There's a lot of avenues in the service work. Sponsorship. I lost my sponsor. That first sponsor. To tell you how cunning, baffling, and powerful this thing is, that man helped save my life. He got drunk after 28 years. He sponsored myself, my next sponsor that I had for 17 years, and Groves, one of the co-founders of the Alton Roundup. I'm going to tell this. I just told, I think, somebody back in the kitchen. 2 weeks ago tonight, I think, or 3 weeks ago, whenever it was, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I joined the Monday night group at that Sure Club. A man was there that helped me. I think he didn't want to go to Macon as a GSR, so they conned me off, and I started going down there early on. But anyhow, he was a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous. He quit going. A friend of mine called me a month ago and said, I won't even call his name because I hope he can get back. But said after 27 years, he'd started back drinking. He drank for 3 years, and now he's trying to get back. About the time you think you've seen it all in Alcoholics Anonymous, there'd be a new ripple. This man come to me and handed me a white chip. It was all dirty and dingy. He said, Jerry, would you give me my white chip? I've been blessed to give a lot of people some birthday chips and all that, but that's the first time I'd ever. And this man had helped me almost 28 years ago. The importance of staying active or staying regular in this thing is, I can't emphasize it enough. The meeting makers make it. The people that stay involved. Some find your niche. I've been so blessed that I've got to be involved with different things, from service work to the roundup to da 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 da. A girl touched my heart tonight. Come on, talk. I get to do a deal over to hospital on Wednesday. Been getting go over there for a long time. And I was telling her, after I do that on Wednesday and I come out, I feel as strong. Don't mean that I'm past playing, but I feel as strong about my sobriety as any time during the week, because it is fresh there. When you go in where they cut themselves up, where they try to shoot yourself, where they, you know, it'll make it real. It's real. Damon gets to do it. I'm not unique. He gets to do it at the jails. Other people have different things. Get involved with something. If it's your home group, being the greeter. I sound like I'm preaching and teaching. I don't mean to, guys and girls, but this thing will take you. I'm going to close with this. A drunk like myself, it's going to be a little ego talking, but I can't help it. It's fresh on my mind, and usually that's what happens. I just told you, Jeanette and I just got back from Al-Anon International Convention in Vancouver, Canada. They also, some of you have been to international conventions in AA or Al-Anon, but I told Jeanette, because they didn't have a whole lot of folks from Georgia out there, in AA especially, but Eva, if you'd have told me on November 5th, 1985, Jerry, you're going to get the call from the GSO office one of these days, wants you to chair a meeting at the Al-Anon International Convention. Have three speakers. Your job is to introduce them, and if they get over it on their time, let them know. They have 20. And be in one of the prettiest places you've ever been in your life, overlooking the bay, seaplanes taking off, and one of the speakers on the panel talked about it. He had to stop. It was so beautiful. I don't believe I could have talked to him. Seaplane taking off, boats, cruise ship coming in. If you'd have told me when I stand in front of a mirror, 1985, Eva's going to call you and say, Jerry, would you chair this meeting? I'd have told you, you're the nut. If I could just stay sober one day. That's just an example of what took place. And this lady was just one of us. She'd been working at GSO in New York for 17 years. And we sat down and talked, and she told me about how they called her to take that job. And she was on the way to Atlanta to start discussing In 2015, the International will be here. If you're looking for a job, they'll find you a job. Jeanette wants to be a greeter at the airport. I don't know where she'd get assigned that job or not. But I couldn't believe, and after these three people talked, and the little lady there won me over. She's a delegate for GSO, or for British Columbia in New York. Their topic was anonymity, and she done the best job out of the three of them. And if our budget would afford it, I'd have her here. But now you're talking about a jam-up speaker and delivery, and this made an instant friend. Well, I could not get out of Ackworth drinking liquor. I had big plans, but I had to worry about making them house payments and stuff. Where I, you know, I couldn't get to Las Vegas. Never made Las Vegas drunk. Been there several times now, sober. But the bottom line is, for me tonight, had a black guy from College Park, Georgia, explain to me behind the podium in Carville, Georgia, one Wednesday night, his name was Billy B., some of you might have heard him, about humility. About the time I heard people sit around in the room and say, about the time you think you've got it, you lost it. I didn't like that answer. I did not, and I don't like it today. But what Billy B. said that night, he got behind the podium just like this. He said, I'm Billy B., and I'm an alcoholic, and I got some humility. I said, I'm going to listen to this. And what he said was, what I'm going to say to you now. I need you people, and I need God in my life, or I'm a dead duck. I'm a dead duck. If nobody's told you they love you today, let me be the first. And thanks again for inviting me.